Welcome to episode 157 of the Movie City Maniacs. On tonight's episode, our 2022 Noirvember begins with Laura from 1944. Welcome, everyone, to the Movie City Maniacs. I'm Kyle.
I'm Maddie.
And I'm Adam.
And yes, we are
beginning... Put on your trench coats, pop up them collars, put on your fedora hat.
We're all drinking Stingers tonight.
Yeah.
Yes, our continuing our beginning, I guess, our Noirvember of 2022. We actually started this last year with covered four films, and we're continuing the tradition again this year with another four films. We won't spoil them, but tonight we are talking about the classic Laura from 1944.
Yeah, there's Maddie, a lot of that. Laura.
Maddie rocking the, you kind of got the radio voice today. You got
That's what I'm doing. I'm a little bit sick, so I might have some cough and jags, but here we are, man.
It's all part of the, you can blame
Everything.
It on the whiskey or something.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
The dimple whiskey. What was it called? Simple whiskey or dimple whiskey? They're calling it
dimple.
In this one. Dimple whiskey.
Yeah, it's that's a high end whiskey.
The $8
high end scotch. Dimple scotch.
I do feel like this is going to be like a more relaxing, easier episode after the Shocktober.
Yeah.
We won't spoil who was the winner of that, but if you haven't listened to it, go check it out. A lot of fun, but it was long and tiring. 4 hour episodes. I think this is going to be.
Yeah, this won't be a
lot
four
smaller. we've watched a lot less this week. I know I have for sure. So. Anything you guys want to talk about, or should we just jump into what we're
watching? I guess
watching,
we just finished Shocktober with your party.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And Guy Fawkes kind of ends it for us. And I was just going to recap what we watched last year for Noirvember as highlights. So if you want to go back and check out 2021, we watched Double Indemnity, The Big Sleep, Night in the City, and The Big Heat. Pretty big collection.
Classics there.
And
which is funny because we still haven't covered what some would argue is the biggest, and I don't think we are going to cover it this year. Should I spoil?
Sure.
The Maltese Falcon.
I don't know if it like
it's definitely one of the biggest.
One of the biggest, and maybe the
probably
one,
that or Big Sleep.
The one that really started it off. Yeah. I would say. It's tough. Like, I think it depends.
Not
on...
even saying best, but I just feel like any time when I was looking up, like, even when I was trying to choose, because what we do when we do themes, we usually all decide on one, and then we each pick one. So you kind of get a bit of our, you know, our tastes in the mix. And when I was trying to decide on that, what I was going to choose again, I was going through all noir lists to see if there's anything that maybe I hadn't seen, or try to refresh what I wanted to pick of something I had seen. And yeah, that seemed to be the one that was.
I feel like
up
that
there.
And Double Indemnity.
Indemnity is probably the other big one
That might like, and they kickstart. This series off, or this style off, I should say, where then it becomes, you know, a way for them mainly to make cheap pictures in a lot of cases.
Yeah. A lot of dialogue and a lot of like back and forth.
Yeah, and you know,
couple
black
sets,
and white, not Technicolor, not a ton of, you know, you're not getting 300 extras to you know, race the chariots or whatever.
Yeah, that is a thing, and definitely about this film, and even the film we're going to cover. Well, I guess next week has a bit of a
yeah,
that's
kind of a cool.
It is definitely it's definitely smaller cast for sure. I'm finding in the noirs I've been watching.
Yeah, and this one would have been a bigger kind of production because, you know, they worked on it forever. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a lot of intrigue in terms of how Laura was made.
Which we'll get into shortly.
Spoilers, she was actually a robot in this movie. It's one of the first sci-fi movies ever made.
It's weird where she goes, beep, bop, beep, bop.
And Vincent Price goes, yeah, whoa, what's going on here?
But yeah, so I don't have a ton to go over, but I thought I might start if sure. everyone's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, jump in.
Because I watched an Otto Preminger movie that was so every week I'm going to be doing an Instagram kind of this or that. So it was Fallen Angel from 1956 or Finding 46 against Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. Fallen Angel was victorious.
The win.
I've never even heard of that one.
So this is directed by Preminger, and it also stars Dana Andrews. So that's kind of why I put it in there. I also put in Beyond a Reasonable Doubt because a similar sort of situation where I think it has Dana Andrews, but maybe not anybody else. I thought maybe there's another actor in there, but anyway. So this is a pretty cool one. I would say, dang, like, then. In terms of story. So basically, Dana Andrews is coming into this town. He's on a bus. He's completely broke. He's in between L.A. and San Francisco, kind of in the middle of nowhere,
like hanging out in Pasadena, kind of,
and like even further into the bushes of California. And he's got a buck left, so he just gets off and goes into town. And they're running, you know, what they call a spook show, which is basically like these people that would go to try to talk to their loved ones. And it's John Carradine, who's always a welcome presence on screen. He's the medium that's talking to all the people in town. But the ex-mayor's daughter is very against this and tries to stop the show. And Dane Andrews, basically to make some money, comes and saves the show. There's like some really kind of witty dialogue between him and the manager of the guy that's the medium. And how he basically takes over. He makes the show a big success. And then he also finds Linda Darnell, who I know from Unfaithfully Yours and Hangover Square, a really like kind of stunning presence that she has. And she's perfectly cast as this woman who basically just wants to live her life the way she wants to, but knows she has to because she's in this nowhere town, kind of hitch her ride to a man, and it never quite works out for her. And then Dana Andrews and her start this kind of thing, but she doesn't want anything to do with him because she's been there, done that. Unless he's got money and prospects, she's not going to San Francisco with him, even though he's got a little bit of money. So he stays there to try to convince her, and it ends up being this intrigue about the mayor's, the dead mayor's two daughters. I love the setup, and I really like Preminger as a director, and we'll talk about this in Laura a lot, but he lets the actors do the work while subtly shading them without taking them out. There's no kind of like overemphasis on reaction shots most of the time. If a reaction shot's there, there's a real big purpose. So then he's playing Dane Andrews, who's kind of... he's kind of a dick in Laura, but he's a bigger dick in this. Like, he's a huge fucking asshole to everybody, basically.
Who is he?
Waldo?
No. Oh. Dane Andrews is the lead, is the detective in Laura.
Okay.
Like, you know, just like, give, like, doesn't trust anybody, but also is constantly doing terrible things to people. It's like, this is the hero? This is kind of fucked. And that's kind of the problem of this movie, is they...
You don't like him?
Well, you, even though like you like him, what's being portrayed on screen, if you think about it for 2 seconds, you're like, this guy's bad. This is not a good guy. And then there's a big twist in this one as well that I think is really well done. But I don't know if where it takes it afterwards is totally justified in the same way. I think I'm going to give it a 6.5. Like, there's still like... I could see maybe liking this more if I could just accept the other lead actress who plays the girl that he's trying to steal the money from just isn't on the level of everybody else. There's a million character actors that you'll recognize, and they're all fantastic in this. It started falling apart in the third act for me.
Cool.
Still worth the watch.
Check out.
And Preminger is directing the shit out of this.
Yeah, I was looking. This doesn't have a Blu-ray yet. I guess it's a Fox release, so now Disney. So
part of the Fox Noir.
Who
collection.
Knows well if we'll ever get a Blu-ray release, I guess.
The quality of it that was shown on Criterion is pretty good. It's definitely been restored. It's not amazing.
Yeah.
but it's still like not what I was when I was first watching a lot of these movies in like
it was
2000, 2001 and 2002. It was rough, like the quality of the picture.
Yeah.
So I watched this, I guess, a documentary / American crime drama called Spectre, which is a Phil Spector story done in four different parts. So half of this is pretty much a behind the music about Phil Spector and how he changed the sound of America in the 60s. And the other half is like a court documentation like case of like him murdering the Laura, I forget her name. But it goes into like how he created the sound, how he's like his life and like his childhood and kind of shows him what he did. Then it cuts to like the other half is like, yeah, he took her girl back to his place and put a gun in her mouth and all the court stuff that happened with it. But they also put a nice little spotlight on the murder victim. They're like, yeah, she was an actress. Like, people were portraying her as this like floozy star. Like, no, she was an actual proper actress. Like, she was in some Corman movies and whatnot. It's actually like, I guess, told her story for the first time. So it was crazy, hella interesting how like it was like five different things going on at the same time.
So it wasn't too salacious in terms of like propping him. I think the difficulty, like, how do you prop him up?
It was so weird because like it showed like he had the sound of America and people were like, yeah, he did all this. But when he was doing this, they got like all his old bandmates from the Teddy Bears. Carol Connors? Carol Connors. Anyways, and she was talking to him like, yeah, when we were starting out, like, he was brutal to me. And then he was brutal to all the lead singers and like he wanted to control.
Yeah, Ronnie Spector did not have a good life.
Yeah,
with
But he's like, all the musicians he tried to control, but like, yeah, we're musicians, man. Like, you pay us, we'll play whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
And even Darlene Love, they introduced her and like, oh, you want me to play lead? That's gonna be more money, baby. Like, she's like,
yeah.
They all people can push back, but when he found someone that like couldn't push back, he kind of controlled.
Did they talk about him and Cohen?
Yes. And then, like, they talk like Leonard Cohen's like, this excited him. Like, I guess what happened is there was a team, the guy loved hanging out with guns and blowing holes in the wall and whatnot.
It talked about
all his gun paraphernalia and whatnot. But I guess he put a loaded gun to Leonard Cohen's head because he didn't want to sing after like 8 o'clock or something. He's like, tired. I want to go home. I'm done. He's like, you're getting in there. You're going to fucking sing, baby. And they kind of put a gun to his
Death
head.
Of a Ladies Man.
Yep. And he's like, okay, he did it. And people ask, like, Leonard Cohen, like, why didn't you leave? He's like, I excited me, man. Like, what's this guy going to do? It's Phil Spector. Like, if it was some, like, dope, I would, like, yeah, I'm not going to come back. Fuck you. But it's like, fucking, he's the sound of the 60s, man. You can't say no to him. So that's what this talks about. Like, he got his way pretty much for his entire life.
And it just probably just kept getting worse and worse.
Even the detectives and the lawyers on, like, the criminal case were like, this guy made a mockery out of, like, this young girl, like, on stand and, like, made a mockery out of the justice system, like, during this trial, like, wearing his different wigs and kind of being a bit of a weirdo, like. But it actually talked about his mental health as well. Like, it talked to his daughter, and, like, it goes really in-depth. It was interesting as hell, man. Yeah, even his daughter, like, I guess he gifted Ronnie twins as, like, a Christmas present. Like, yeah, you want kids? Here you go. I adopted them. We have twins now.
Oh,
Merry
wow.
Christmas, baby. He's like, I guess, yeah, that's crazy. And one of the, I don't want to give any too much away, but like one of the twins ended up passing away. And the other twin was still his daughter. So she's still like, well, he's my dad. I love him, but I can't really say much about this. So it was hella interesting. It portrayed him as an actual person, like flawed, genius person. So it's cool to see that. So I'm giving it 7.5, man. It's only like four parts. It's worth checking out.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I just watched one movie this week, a noir.
Hey, what? One? Aren't we supposed to watch 20?
Yeah, honestly.
What's going on?
I watched Gilda from 1946.
Oh, this is with Glenn Ford and Rita Hayworth.
Yeah, exactly. It's usually high up on a lot of lists. Criterion put it out on Blu-ray.
This is one I haven't seen in, it's got to be 20 years, so I remember liking this, but I have it pulled out. I pulled out all the Blu-rays of what I want to watch, and when I pulled that one out, I was like, I don't remember what this movie is about. I just remember Rita Hayworth like moving her hair around.
Yeah, like in The Shawshank?
She's friggin' stunning in this, but it opens up Ford's character. He's kind of this squirmy, like he cheats at craps, wins a bunch of money, and then he's about to get mugged on the street, and this stranger kind of saves him with this cane that has this blade that pops out of it, And he says, hey, if you're looking for a place to get some money, you go to this casino, but just don't cheat there. And Glenn Ford goes there and wins a bunch of money and cheats, and he gets brought up by the big stooge there to the owner of the casino, and it's the guy that that saved him, and he ends up working for him as his like right-hand man. He goes away on vacation, comes back married to this stunning woman, Gilda, and it turns out that you can tell right away that there's tension between her and Glenn Ford's character, and they definitely have a history. I don't know. It was okay. I was really excited to watch this one. Like, I had all the noirs, and this was one of the top of the heap for me. But, I mean, there's not a lot to it. It's pretty much just Glenn Ford and Rita Hayworth jealous and spiteful towards each other and just doing nasty things. She's going around sleeping with a bunch of people, or so it seems, just to make him jealous. She's already married his boss, and he has to look out for her, but he's just like a total asshole to her the whole movie. And that's pretty much the movie. I mean, there's a side plot where like his boss has all these, you know, he has like a thing going on in these companies that he might have ripped off some other guys from another country, and they want their companies back and this kind of stuff. And the cops are kind of in there after them as well. But like all that's kind of like pushed to the side. It's really just watching this hateful relationship. And it's almost like, I don't know, it's almost like depressing at times. Like it's not really an enjoyable, you know, I don't know. I guess when I think of noir, I always think of crime for some reason. I know noir doesn't always mean crime, but a lot of it is. And this has that crime aspect, but it's definitely a noir that's all about this relationship. I don't know. I'm going to give it like 6.5.
Okay.
Not one of my favorites. I know. I don't know. I'm kind of striking out with a lot of these Criterion noirs that a lot of people are loving. Like, I loved Asphalt Jungle, but like They Live by Night, which is one a lot of people seem to like. Like, I didn't care. And that one, again, is more of a relationship. Maybe it's the relationship noirs I don't care as much about. I need like the cool action scene and set pieces and stuff. And Detour I didn't like as much either. But I don't know. It was fine.
Is They Live by Night on, like, that's a Criterion
put out the Blu-ray. Yeah, Blu-ray. Because I picked up, like, I still have to get some of them, but I picked up most of their noir Blu-rays. I have another one that we may be talking about this month. I won't spoil.
Ace in a Hole and...
I don't have that one yet, no. Yeah. There's a couple I don't own. There's, like, Pink... what's the pink one? Not the Pink Detective or... I don't know.
Yeah. But, like, what... Yeah, because when I think picked, a lot... Like, a lot of them, Detour at least is like a like that was just like an obscure movie. I'm trying to think of what else I have from them, but
I have Nightmare Alley, which I was almost going to pick this month, the original Nightmare Alley, which I'm going to try to still watch even if we're not covering it, because I've been curious to see. I love carnies and carnivals, especially
that has
a
really great reputation. That
I think the problem is the story is, like, from what I read, is pretty similar to the remake. It sounds like it is one of the more dark and depressing noirs.
I had heard that a lot of noirs are pretty like they don't end well, but like I don't know, I never feel like dirty or something.
I don't know. I find that, like, even the noirs, like, usually you're rooting for the criminal or the high school. Like, usually the end, maybe it doesn't pay off, but, like, I don't know. I think it's different when the whole movie is just, like, two spiteful characters hating each other, which this one I thought kind of was.
Yeah, we'll see if I get back to that one, because I think that was during my original, run of watching noirs, at least from, you know, the movie we're covering this week, I saw as a child as well. But most of them, I just was like, oh, shit, these are great. Mm-hmm. They were kind of an extension of me getting into Hitchcock, and I just started watching a bajillion of them. But I haven't seen a lot of them in a long, long time.
I think it's no surprise to listeners. So, like, I definitely – give me the crime, the heist, the action. You know, that's definitely more of my
– jam.
Yeah.
Yeah, jam. Anyone else watch anything else?
I watched a series, House of Dragons.
That's the Game of Thrones.
I guess it's a kind of a prequel, but like hundreds of years before what happens in Game of Thrones. So the only time any of these people were mentioned on that show, they were almost like legends.
Yeah.
Like
mythological creatures.
But this is when the dragons still roamed and still lived. And it's basically another Game of Thrones. Who's going to take over?
Is it good? Or like, I watched the first and I'm like, I don't know. I'm just not into it right now. So I'm curious if it gets
I think it's quite good. Yeah? I think if you liked the political intrigue part of Game of Thrones, you're going to like this. Because all it is everybody saying one thing, but
Meaning another,
and you have to read between the lines of that. But I think it's got its own thing, and most of the acting has been really good. The one weird part about this is they're trying to go through many, many years in this season. So they go from basically when there's a queen or eventual queen and a princess that are their families are going to fight. There's going to be the green and the blacks, and they're going to go there. But they start, and they're supposed to be like teenagers. And then they like 3 years go by, and you go, well, everything's kind of different here. What happened? Like, that happens a lot on the show. And then they start having kids, and they're like, wow, that kid got really big. Why is this kid not as big? Like what are the fucking ages here?
Yeah.
It's not a huge deal, but it is occasionally a little distracting that they have to go through like probably more years than all of Game of Thrones in one season.
They don't change actors. They just kind of
They do change actors.
Oh, that's going to be weird.
I will say this, all of the actors, the young, they're all really well cast and really well put together. And Matt Smith, who was known as the Doctor Who at one time, he gets to play kind of like this asshole, like somewhat villainous, but also you want to root for him character. He's great at that.
The question is, how much rape is in it?
None.
Oh, wow. Like, that's it. Everyone that I remember in Game of Thrones, those first couple seasons, that's all everyone talked about. How much was in that show?
Yeah, like, there's a couple. I think they actually deal with sexual politics in
a
much more interesting way. There's definitely incest. There's definitely some uncle niece stuff. So you have to kind of just remove your mind from what that actually means. But, it is based on kind of like George R. R. Martin looked through
history
to kind of influence some of these kind of things that he was writing about. He's more involved. I think that was the problem with the later seasons, which I don't dislike as much as...
People shit on them quite a bit, right?
I think the last season blows it, especially right at the end. But they're still like some of the act, like the one, like there's a couple episodes where the action set pieces are just phenomenal. But anyways, I'm gonna give this one 7.5. It's quite promising.
And okay.
I think it because it's taking so much
it's
scope.
It's on the heels of like Game of Thrones. Like you're gonna compare it to it no matter what you do, right?
And I think that they've surpassed easily, and it seems like it's already hit.
Oh, perfect!
It's like the biggest show on HBO already.
Oh, right on.
And it was quickly like, oh, this is Game of Thrones, but a completely different thing. They have their own vision, but they're keeping this fake history that I quite like. And you know, whenever a map appears on screen, and they,
you know, where,
I'm like, oh, I like the maps.
Yeah,
like I don't know what it does but I do like that aspect. So. That was the only other thing I watched.
So I watched one more thing, but I'll be really quick. I don't have much to say. I did finish, we talked about it on the Halloween, episodes, but Superstore season one.
Okay.
I'm digging the show.
Are you watching it on Netflix?
I think so.
Okay. There's a weird thing that happens. I'm curious. I'm watching it on Netflix. I finished the first season.
Oh, are you talking about the first episode of season two?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I actually watched that. Yeah, I looked it up. The first episode of season two. Yeah, something big I won't spoil happens at the end of season one. And then season two, none of that has happened.
Oh, it was a one-off episode.
I think for the Olympics.
Yeah, exactly. Olympics. It was supposed to take place during season
one. Yeah, that blew
up
my brain too when we were watching that earlier this year.
Yeah. I guess, did the show air or was it always a streaming show?
No, it aired. It was NBC.
NBC, that would have been weird, like, if they did that when it first aired and you're like, what the fuck?
I think it was just supposed to be like for the, because NBC had the Olympics.
Yeah. They had to do something.
I think they aired it, like when they're off in the
because
summer.
Because even in this episode, there's a bunch of like really attractive looking people doing weird things in the background. Like, They're probably Olympic athletes. Did you notice that? Like, did you watch the?
I don't remember that, but I.
Like, there's a girl, like, they're mopping the floor, and then she slipped on the floor, does, like, a pirouette, and kind of, like, lands on her feet, and you're like, uh-huh. Mm.
That's got to be some, yeah, that makes sense.
But, yeah, we'll see. I mean, if, you know, by when I'm on season 3 or 4, we'll see if it's still
holding up. So, what do you think?
Right.
Actually, I'm kind of digging the show. I'm giving it a 6.5. Like, I think there's a promise.
I probably even go higher. Yeah. I might go 7 or 7.5.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really digging
it. I think you'll, we'll see, but I think it.
I think Mark McKinney is destroying it right now.
Yeah,
so.
he's
been
awesome.
Amazing. I think the.
And I like the guy that.
The
I can't
next
his
two
name
seasons are maybe the Garrett.
Garrett, is that his name? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's funny.
I think the next two might be where I really feel.
Where they. I do feel like a lot of people are still struggling to find where the character is, but.
Well, you're struggling to find those characters.
Yeah, exactly.
I like the show overall. It was just like we went through it. It was just kind of like
it's nice little brain. Like turn your brain off and watch it.
Yeah. It's too bad because like a lot of the same people I think involved are involved in the new blockbuster, and I've heard that's not as good. The trailer, at least for it, didn't look really funny at all.
Is it the same?
I think
creator
it's the same. I thought it was the same creator. Is this the same guy that? Yeah.
At least the person that
and
picked up that ball finally will not have to pick up that ball. Never got to purchase that ball. The opening sequence always grabs the ball, and then you know they must just keep coming back and be like, "Should I buy this? Should I not buy this?" And they go, "Oh, I'm gonna get it this time."
And then off
camera. They put the ball back and then come back for every beginning of every episode.
Huh.
Don't know what you're talking about, but...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
The theme of the song, it has a person that picks up a ball every time.
I see.
And this was a... Yeah.
Ongoing joke?
That makes no sense. But like, it's a guy. Is he going to buy the ball? fuck, yeah, I don't know.
You know what pisses me off just quickly going to that blockbuster? I thought, like, I was so excited when I heard they're doing this. If you're going to do a show about blockbuster, when are you going to set it? Like late 80s, early 90s?
I would
90s.
Say like the...
Early 90s to mid-90s when like
late
Blockbuster 90s, is a huge
late
thing.
Late 90s, early 2000s. Uh-huh.
So this is like about now. It's like the last Blockbuster store remaining. And you know, that's what it's about. Like, who wants to watch that?
Yeah, it seems depressing.
And it's like they're renting out DVDs.
I would rather just be a video store instead of fucking Blockbuster.
Well, that's you don't even need Blockbuster. Just a video store would be so
sucked.
Much fun.
Yeah.
Like, Blockbuster was the worst of the video stores. They just became so big
but they were
that
the biggest,
they destroyed everybody.
But I think Blockbuster is where you would kind of have, it's like the equivalent of Walmart. You're going to have a lot of play.
But
strange
just
people.
Call,
I
just,
don't know, man. Like, you go down
mind
to,
you,
like,
you do lose,
Steel
you lose
City
the porn
Video,
section.
You got some of the craziest shit you could see, right? Like,
and Blockbuster did lose the porn
Blockbuster
section.
Didn't have Faces of Death, where this one did.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Like, that's, well, they basically stopped NC-17 movies from being made.
Yeah. It's just, I was so excited when I heard about this. I'm like, man, this is my bread and butter.
Yeah, I like the
a show
the
taking place
store,
in a video store. And then it's like, it's like when this is dead. And the whole joke, I'm sure, is going to be about how physical media
well,
is
my
dead.
Video Flicks show is going to be great. That's
good. It's
going to
be great, right?
I think we should
none
do
of us
one.
Worked at a video store, did
no.
we?
No.
My mom did when I was growing up. So that was like the greatest thing ever. You go say hi to her. You're like, here, take some movies home with you instead
I
of a babysitter.
Like I
which
that.
One was she at?
Super Video Hits on King.
Super Video Hits on King. Did you have to say the whole thing?
There was three of them. So it was Super Video Hits on Parkdale, Super Video Hits on, I forget where else. Anyways, yeah.
My dream was always like a video store or like a rental store, like a Music World or H&V type place or a theater.
Yeah.
And I never got to do any of them.
Yeah, I kind of got a little bit of the record store for a little bit.
Yeah, Sonic Onion.
Sonic Onion, yeah, but not that much. Like,
yeah.
I was getting the afternoon shift on my co-op. But yeah, I never did any of those cool things. I worked at a hardware store when, legitimately, the whole time I was there, did not care about building or building supplies at all. It wasn't until I left and then was renovating a house and was like.
Oh,
I can't.
That's what this is for.
That would be honestly it. It was like, that thing that was on the shelf people would ask me about. And that's where I met my wife. And I would just be like, Tammy can help you. And then I would just go back into the shadows.
A little leech, like, hey, Tammy.
Retail was fun, though. I think we should do a script. Like, Clerks is fun.
Yeah.
You know, you got Clerks, you got High Fidelity, something like that.
That would work.
You know.
Yeah. Let's Superstore, it's a great workplace.
Yeah,
I like Superstore too because it does address where Brick and Mortar stands. And there's some great gags about that.
Anyways, is that it then? Or
should we get into
Let's do Laura.
Okay, well, let's throw up. Here's the trailer for Laura from 1944.
I remember when Laura bought these glasses. She loved them.
I was groping for some way to keep Laura's name out of it.
She was always quick to seize upon anything that would improve her mind or her appearance. Laura had innate breeding. I selected a more attractive hairdress for her. I taught her what clothes were more becoming to her. Through me, she met everyone. Men admired her. Women envied her.
You have rarely met a girl like Laura. Few women have been so beautiful, so exotic, so dangerous to know.
You're Laura Hunt, aren't you?
Yes.
I'm Shelby Carpenter. Want to dance?
I'm not alone.
Oh, you poor girl. I bet he still does the polka.
Yes, Betsy Ross taught it to me.
It was as natural for Laura to be picked out from among thousands of alluring girls as it was for her to be surrounded by luxury, mystery, and scheming men.
Get going.
You better watch out, McPherson, or you'll end up in a psychiatric ward. I don't think I've ever had a patient who fell in love with a corpse.
Miss Hunt and I were going to be married this week, you know.
No, he doesn't know. And neither do I, or you, or anyone else alive.
What do you mean by that?
As a matter of fact, she was going to the country to think it over. She was extremely kind, but I was always sure she would never have thrown her life away on a male beauty in distress.
Every woman will feel that when it comes to men, Laura gets by with murder. Every man will feel that when it comes to murder, it couldn't involve a more enticing girl.
Don't worry. I told you I'd bring in the killer today. Yeah, I was just going to make the arrest when you called. No, I can't tell you now. I'm not alone. You'll see when I come in.
Police detective falls in love with the woman whose murder he is investigating. Yes, we're talking about Laura from 1944.
Ooh.
I write with a goose quill dip pen in venom.
I loved Waldo in this movie. Okay, so I guess there's what, three main players in this movie?
Three main players, yeah.
Yeah, it's Vincent Price who plays Harry...
yeah, he's the cat.
Shelby.
He is so goddamn charming.
So like, he's the one that is engaged to Laura. So yeah, what happens is it opens up. Laura's already dead, and this detective is investigating her death. And you have Vincent Price to Shelby, who is her boyfriend, fiance. You have the writer.
Waldo Lidecker,
who is kind of steals the movie, and is it just mainly the two? Oh, and then you have
Dana Andrews is the detective.
Yeah, the
detective, and then there is also Judith Anderson, probably most famous for Rebecca. She's also in this as Anne Treadwell. Mm-hmm. Well, sorry, and she's in love with Vincent Price's character. So you think she might have something to do with it as well.
He is just taking advantage of her constantly.
Like, and really taking advantage of everybody, but doing it in a way that's like, he's lying through his teeth all the time, and he gets away with it with
because he is charming.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, hey, can I get you a sandwich there, detective? And like, he's always like...
Without the mustache, Vincent Price still has a charm.
Well, but it's weird, though. Like, whenever you explain this movie and you go, yeah, Vincent Price, he's kind of like the boy toy. And they're like, what?
What? Yeah.
But they thought, like, this is something I didn't know until I watched it this time, that they were trying to launch him through this movie as, like, the new Perry Como.
Okay.
So there's a whole, and I don't think it exists anymore, but there's a whole sequence where he sings this song at the beginning, which was going to be his big song.
That's Darkness falls across the land.
But like, what a different career.
Yeah.
Well, he even like acts and talks differently in this one. He doesn't have that like Vincent Price mannerisms that you used to. It's kind of like a different performance, I thought. I don't know, that from his like Poe and
yeah, horror. It's different, but it's still like definitely Vincent Price.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the drawl is maybe more expressive or something.
He's still kind of
he doesn't have like the pause
way,
and like, stuff I found though, like that he normally does. Like
no, like he's not chewing scenery.
Yeah.
Like you know, he's trying to actually fit in. Yeah, those are really the main four, and Laura, who's played by Jean Tierney, who I just watched her in Leave Her to Heaven. Did I talk about this on the show?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah,
so.
I think it was maybe the last thing I covered, maybe before Shocktober, and she was in Night in the City, which we covered last year on the series, like a really like one of the bigger actresses of the
1940s and 50s.
Like
stunning actress, like and fuck, who we were just talking about,
Rita Hayworth.
Yeah, like man. Women in these noir films, man,
they kind of find figure, is what you're saying?
You kind of like, you can understand why all these people are in love and obsessed with this woman.
Yeah, and what that's what the basically story. Laura is dead, and the detective has to go and find out as much as he can about Laura to figure out who killed her. And it's a grisly death, too.
A shotgun to the face. Like
at like point.
Yeah,
and they like, which this is the other thing with noir. I don't know how they got away with a lot of this because I think maybe because they weren't their big picture, but like they talk about like the way people are killed in these movies where they just don't normally in 40s and 50s. Mm-hmm. This is like a huge, like Technicolor production. They're not going to allow
like
that happening.
Her face looked like hamburger meat.
Yeah,
didn't say that, but like.
But yeah, so he's trying to figure out what's happened there, and he first meets with Clifton Webb, who does put together one of the performances of the ages and hadn't been in a movie since 1925.
Oh, that's crazy. Because he is playing Waldo
Lydecker
so well. He's such like a witty, like. Author type who just constantly has the last word and the perfect
incredibly
thing to say.
Fussy and so he basically does a flashback of how he met Laura and how Laura came into his life and how great Laura is, and he just explains this.
We are first
to the
introduced
detective.
To this character in a Trumbo style where he is like sitting in a bathtub, typing on a typewriter, and he does one of the most ball and power moves I've ever seen. He gets out of the bathtub like a la James Bond. He's like, hand me that bathrobe, will you, detective?
That's like, another one of these, like, I think I was more aware of it this time. Like, how the fuck? Like, big power move there, for sure.
Well, I thought you were going to mention his flashback where he's talking about how he meets Laura, like he's just fucking being a prick. He's just eating his dinner
and doesn't even look at her.
No.
So Laura's trying to get her is trying to get a move on up in the ad world. She's trying to get him to endorse this pen, and he just won't even look at her while he's eating dinner, and he's flicking stuff off his plate the whole time, and he's just like taking bits, like he's just like just the most fussy like meticulous man that's ever existed. But he ends up, she actually like starts tearing him apart. He feels bad. She comes into life. He kind of builds her up. And did you guys both watch the extended cut?
Yeah.
I'm curious. What was the difference?
It's just one scene.
It's one scene that they took out because of the war. It's when
seemed a bit too lavish, I guess.
Yeah. When he's talking about how he told her how to dress, how to put her hair up.
Okay.
And when she's rising through the ranks, all that minute 30
was taken out.
And I guess we should mention that. So Otto Preminger had to fight to get this actor for the part because producer, is it Daryl F.
Zanuck?
I guess he didn't want him because he was knowing that he was a homosexual. He quoted, he doesn't walk, he flies, was his way of describing
him being
gay.
Well, Zanuck also didn't want Preminger.
Yeah. Well, I guess they had some bad blood because they did a film previously where
in the 30s,
I think he was he fired off that?
He was fired off that, and I think Preminger completely blew up and said some things that he shouldn't. But he was the one that brought this, and he was going to work as producer.
Mm-hmm.
And who did they bring in?
So they originally hired this director, Ruben Mamaloon? I don't know how to pronounce his names. But I guess he's the guy, he directed, I think, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, the film in the 30s, I believe.
Right.
Or, is it the 30s or 40s? It would have been probably the 40s, right?
I think it's early 40s, yeah.
This guy hired, and he actually had filmed, I think he did a week of shooting.
Two weeks of shooting.
Well, what happened? Yeah. Well, he does a week, and Preminger sees this and is like, he brings this up to Zanuck and says, like, this is not, like, nothing is looking
Judith
good.
Anderson is acting like she's on stage, like, way overacting. Basically, Clifton Webb, who the other director didn't want, so he's completely, he seems uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Tierney and Dana Andrews look like they're amateurs, and they're supposed to be the big stars of this movie. The costumes look like they're not from the era. Yeah, total disaster.
The famous painting is even wrong. Yeah.
Done by the previous director's wife.
Yeah, so he brings up, you got to see this. He checks out and he's like, oh, this isn't good. Gives him some notes. How do you pronounce his name? I'm just going to say Ruben.
Ruben makes sense.
Does another week, knowing that, you know, he's gotten, you know, probably talked to saying this isn't working. Yeah. Does another week, same thing. It's still not working.
He's out.
After this, Preminger's like, we get in, and Zanuck agrees, we got to get rid of him. And yeah, when Preminger takes over, he throws out everyone. He takes over all the costumes, like you
new
said.
New cinematographer.
Sets, new cinematographer, and of course, the famous painting of the director's wife they throw out. And they, I guess they use, like,
it's a photograph.
It's a photograph that they just covered in an oil to kind of give it that painting, which is kind of true, because sometimes when you see those paintings, even really good ones, sometimes it doesn't capture quite the character.
Yeah.
And this one, I think, like, you see that painting, you see
her.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
And that's really important, kind of genius, because she needs to be this ghostly kind of figure. That's rallying around.
The detector needs to become obsessed over her.
I don't know if you guys clocked this, but you know what they're called? When they put, like, a silhouette and they just trace around the silhouette of you? You remember the things they used to do when you were a kid, like, you get a projection? There's a ton of that of Laura throughout the apartment, of, like, these old, like, silhouettes. Which I thought was kind of dope.
Well, who they bring up that she was... They bring up in the flashbacks of who she was, that there was an artist... That, like,
was obsessed with her.
It's almost like the original. There's something about Mary.
Yeah.
There's something about Laura. Like, everyone sees her and falls in love with her, but he's going and doing paintings until the Walter
Waldo
gets jealous.
Yeah. So Waldo Leidecker, just, I think with him, it's not, he doesn't want her to be in love with him, but he wants her to be almost like his pet that he can flaunt around in this creation that he's sculpted in his image, and he can control her. So he just, like, tears apart
a review of this guy's paintings. And it shows, he says, like, I have that, he has the power, right? Like, and don't they hint that he's done this to many other people before or something?
So, well,
men that have come into her life?
No, so he's done it to other people through the press, but didn't have to do it because Laura starts becoming very intuned. Mm-hmm. But then Shelby, the Vincent Price character, comes in, and almost, I think, from his disarming lack of ambition and lack of ability and social standing, endears himself to Laura and then becomes ingrained in her life. But he's, like, I use the word cad, like, that's what he is. He's still running around with other girls, but Laura's got him this great job. They're working together. They're going to get engaged. He's now got money again.
So we need to bring it up. Laura, does she just have terrible taste in men? Like, what the fuck's her story? Why does she end up with all these? And is there actually some... Does she see some kind of relationship between her and the Waldo character, or is it just, like,
I think it's more
like almost like a mentor and protege kind of deal. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think there's any love, and I don't think he wants
any
love.
But it seems like they were, like, almost dating, like, together for a long time.
He just wants her to be an accessory.
Yeah. Like, maybe there's no sexual relations, but it does seem like they were
a couple in some sense.
Well, he made her career, so she feels like she owes him, right? Yeah. He's made everything. Like, she... There's another version of this where she was supposed to be, like, down on her luck, and I think this is part of the play or the
book.
Novella.
Yeah, it is originally based on a a book by
that she's basically about to go to jail for vagrancy, and he saves her. That's and it was a fictitious story that Waldo came up with to basically again showcase like how the myth of Laura, and the myth of Laura is his myth. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with her as an actual person. And you do see that in as the story unfolds, where he's probably a somewhat unreliable narrator.
Mm-hmm.
So when all those, that's that extended cut scene where showing with the haircut and everything else, that's not actually how she looked. That's how he believed in mind she looks.
Well, yeah, I guess I kind of was going to bring up something similar. Like, what do you think it is about, like, watching Gilda, again, I'm going back to that, but that is kind of like when Gilda's on screen, she's magnetic. There's something about her. Laura, on the other hand, is almost like, in the beginning, she's just kind of like this awkward kind of like, do you think, like, why is she successful from what, like, the work she does? Or is it just that she's, like, attracted that every guy wants to be with her?
Maybe she's just charming as hell, too, right?
But I don't even know if you get that charm.
So, again, I think he's trying to show, like, she was just this somewhat ambitious person that would go up to him, but he molds her into this...
socialite.
This charming person. You notice in all of those sequences, she has no dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
That's on purpose. Again, it's Waldo's fictitious version of her. She's probably good at her job. She's probably, like, they show later, she's working late with Shelby.
Mm-hmm.
She's always basically trying to do the best that she can in her job, and she probably just does a really good job and doesn't hurt the way she looks. Mm-hmm. And everybody, because she's also an honest character and almost an innocent character, that's where people fall in love with her more.
Mm-hmm.
So the more that the detective learns about her, it's not that she was just this rich woman that, like, a powerful woman that pushed her way through everything. She did it out of being a genuine good person. She's like the anti-femme fatale.
It's definitely,
But Waldo's version is closer. So it sets it up, and this is another, like, great stroke in this movie, is it sets it up like you're getting this normal noir. You're getting, like, exactly what it is. It's a dead person. We're going to have to find out what happened to her, the mystery aspect. And there's got to be something dark about her, because how did she do this? How did she become so successful? But as the story goes, the story just builds her up as this good, genuine person.
Mm-hmm.
In, like, a world of, like, terrible people.
Yes.
Constantly terrible people.
Everybody. Like. So Preminger's got a great line about basically, like, how the other guy couldn't make this movie. He's good at making movies with nice people. I'm good at making this movie because, I all my friends are heels or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Vincent Price asked him, like, why do you think you were able to make it work? I guess I do want to bring up, I want to talk about the detective too, but just briefly, Judith Anderson, who I think stole the show on her back, and she doesn't get as much to do in this one.
She's got a great
scene. There's a scene where she's talking to Laura about the relationship, because she's in love with Shelby.
Right?
And she just straight up says, like, you know,
he's no good.
Yeah, he's no good for you.
He goes
with me because I'm a terrible person too.
Yeah.
This whole speech, and that's like one of the best.
I love in almost all the whole movie. The movie is another great noir where it's just filled with quotable dialogue after quotable dialogue. But I love all of them are bad, are like kind of terrible people, and they get somewhat called out on it all the time. And Clifton Webb, Waldo Leidecker's character, just sends like a fucking dagger in terms of a zinger that completely destroys their character. And then you have Shelby, who is constantly lying all the fucking time about where he is, where the gun came from, all this kind of stuff. And he instantly is just like, well, you got me. But really, I didn't want to tell you this because of this kind of not great explanation. And there's the fucking detective. He just keeps playing with his baseball games.
I love that he's always playing this handheld where you're trying to, like, roll
these metal balls
in the holes.
If you can do it under a minute, It's a home run.
If you ever go to like a restaurant, a Swiss Chalet or the dentist, something, and they always have that treasure chest for the kids.
Oh, yeah.
I always remember you'd get to pick a free toy, and it was always like junky dollar store stuff.
Do they still have these things?
Yeah, they still have them.
Okay.
Nice. But yeah, that's what it was. Those things are fun.
This is Kyle's dentist, which Kyle's dentist has been, childhood dentist, has been dead for 25 years, but he still goes to the office. He breaks in and he plays with all the toys.
He pulls out one of his teeth and he goes and gets it.
I guess there is something I wanted to talk about the gun, but I guess maybe we can talk about that in spoilers. It's not really a spoiler, but it kind of is, I guess. So I can hold off.
Okay, there was one really weird cut. I don't know if you guys noticed it. It's for Vincent Price when they're in the cottage.
Yep.
And he's just like, they're talking. Then it just goes like a quick cut to Vincent Price, like headshot. Once I just like, no. It goes back to like the dialogue. Do you guys clock that?
No. I didn't know.
It was such a weird like thing, like, oh, that was an odd.
Maybe cut. It's also just odd because in this movie, and I mentioned a little bit in Fallen Angel, he does not cut directly to a face, one face, unless there's a really major reason
to
it.
So
there's
wondering.
A great shot of Laura with a light that shines on her face that ends up being a oner on her, and it's like it's a know why he did it. But he almost shoots everything in two, like
there was
two
times
and three.
When he cut to Vincent Price, was like that was just a weird cut to his face for what I thought was no reason. But like the more you think about it, like, okay, maybe there was a reason.
There must be a reason. Like I didn't clock that, but any individual shot where there are multiple people on camera,
there's a reason.
There's a reason because even he does a lot of whip pans and dolly pans in this, which basically didn't happen in the 40s to not break. So you think about a reaction.
Yeah.
I think Preminger, who I'm liking more and more as I watch his movies, is a little bit different from a lot of the directors of that era. And the big thing is he believes the audience is going to be smart enough to know what the reactions are of the actors instead of like, oh, well, what's this person thinking after they say that? And you got like this is a very difficult movie to talk about, sorry.
Yeah.
Without
spoiling.
There's a lot of like fun kind of twists, I guess, throughout, you call it.
But like the one shot I want to describe is basically Dana Andrews, the detective, getting a piece of information and making a slight gesture on his face while the other actor is there reacting as well. And you can see in real time how they're both reacting to how he takes in that news and he breaks his character. Because again, Dane Andrews, just like in Fallen Angel, but not as much, he's kind of a dickish like guy, like doesn't seem to care about anything. You know, this is my job. I'm always playing this baseball game instead of actually paying attention to people.
Now, do you think that is like an act he's putting on, or do you think he just doesn't care and he just wants to play?
It's an act.
Like he says, he uses
he
it to relax.
He is a good detective, right? Yeah. Like he is a heralded. Like that's why I know Waldo knew about him because he had like the lead in the leg. He got busted.
Yeah, silver
calf.
Like he probably knows all these people are bullshitting, right?
Yeah, he's a smart guy. Like he even like
silver shinbone. Yeah, that's what he's got because he got shot in the leg. I think he's trying to let them talk. So much that they give information.
I will say, like, I don't mind him. I like him, but he's probably my least favorite character. Like, I like everyone else in this movie.
He didn't need to do any heavy lifting because both Waldo and Shelby were doing, like,
and even, yeah, great. And then even, yeah, like, Tierney and
Judith Anderson.
Judith Anderson, I think, even have.
I quite liked Dane Andrews in this, and I like him more and more as I go along and see movie, like I think he's not afraid to look like not a great guy. He's not trying to be a movie star, and you see that in a lot of stuff. He's in Night of the Demon or Curse of the Demon. And he's got that persona where he's able to pull that off, and you still want this guy to succeed. And the more I see, like there's definitely like it's almost like courageousness in that era to not be just like me.
Yeah, like he definitely seems like there's a lot of actors where you hear and it's like, no, I got to have the best scene, the best dialogue.
Yeah.
You get the impression, at least from what I've seen, that like he's willing to share, you know, share that screen with everyone else. Let everyone else have their moments too.
Clifton Webb, credited him, making him feel comfortable, because when he first saw himself, Clifton Webb had just been on, like, in the theater for basically since
ages.
25. Mm-hmm. He's a big theater actor, but no movies, zero movies. That's like, he does a voice in a movie in 1930. That's the only time his voice is heard on screen until
this. Did he have a resurgence after this?
Yes, or? he became one of the most popular actors until his death in, I think, 62. Rightfully so. He's fucking phenomenal.
He's awesome.
And part of that was because he was, everyone in Hollywood knew he was gay. There's a component of that. But this movie was so popular that it gave him an in.
Was there a list for that? Was it called, like, Pink Listed or something like that? Or no?
I don't know.
Because there's got to be, like, oh, the guy's, he flies, doesn't walk. There's got to be, like, he got blacklisted in the 50s.
I'm sure there is a lot of the, you know, there's a lot of stories about Cary Grant and.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of that, well, Vincent Price. Like, yeah, you hear a lot of these actors and directors.
Well, I assume how, like,
James
I would,
Dean,
like,
which is obviously
like,
years later, but, like,
yeah. I assume, like, once you can do anything you want, like, why not?
I think
like,
you had to hide it, but, like, yeah. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think it blacklisted you.
As long as you hid it, and I guess Clifton Webb maybe wasn't as good at hiding it as some of the others. But anyway, so he's shooting that first scene where he's in the bathtub, no shirt, whatever, and he sees the dailies, and he's fucking aghast because he's still been on stage. When you're on stage, you don't look as old. He still thinks of himself as this young actor. And sees that, and he says psychologically it just threw me, and it was Dane Andrews. It was like, here, have a drink with me, have some bourbon with me, and
we'll chat,
calm down. And I guess he was pretty good with the whole crew, with everything changing. I really think he's the fulcrum of the whole movie. The more I've watched this, and I've watched this movie
several times,
many times over the years.
One more thing I got, I don't know too much more, but Waldo, do you think his character is supposed to be gay in the movie? Do you think it's like hinted at?
I think if
he doesn't want to, you know, if there's not actual sexual relationship between him and Laura,
I think there's subtext is probably there.
She's more of his, you know, handbag or something.
Yeah, the subtext is there for sure, but I don't think it's like true. Like, I think.
Well, back then you couldn't openly have it in anything, right? But there is a lot.
He's a bachelor that's in his 50s.
Yeah.
Not that like you don't have to be gay, but I think Preminger knew who he was, always wanted him in the role. They almost had Larry Krager play him, who's Hanover Square and The Lodger, who I love. Yeah.
But he looked too evil or something, right?
Well, he's known as playing heavies.
Yeah.
And I don't get that. I could see Larry Krager in the Vincent Price role.
Okay.
But not. Yeah. So when I saw the names of who they almost put in the movie. But yeah, this is a movie. This spoilers are kind of crucial to talk about it.
So
should we give our rating? Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, this is a weird one to give rating before we go into why.
Yeah.
One of the reasons.
We'll just say, like, there's a big shocker. Like, when does that happen? Is it halfway through the movie?
It's about halfway through.
Yeah, halfway through.
And then you still have the rest of the film to go with it. So that's why it's hard to talk about anything after that.
I feel I'm giving it 7.5, but I feel the second watch, you'll probably dig this a bit more. So I'm going 7.5.
I think I liked maybe a little bit less this time. For me, the first time watch was so special because I think all those twists and turns were like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And I did just watch this, I think, last year.
Yeah.
This is something, you know, maybe give me a couple years. And then, because I'm dumb. I'm one of those dumb guys that I can watch a movie 5 years from now and totally forget the plot. I'm going to still go 8.5, though. I still really like this. It's one of my favorite noirs. I just think that works.
Yeah, I'm probably 9.5. This is like one of my favorite movies.
Up there.
I was almost 9. It kind of started. I watched it maybe 2 years ago, it's been recently, and I've watched this. I watched it maybe 2 years before that because I got like the, I think I got the Blu-ray and I just put it in and then like a year later was like, oh fuck, I love this movie so much.
Yeah.
Like I watched this as a kid when I was like 5 or 6. It's one of those movies that really left an impression when I was that young. And I remember rewatching this as like a 20-year-old, and the twist happens in the middle of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
it's like, what the fuck is going on?
That's
here?
Still that's still one of the best movie moments of all time. And the same thing happened again, where the movie's going along, and I'm like, oh, this is really cool, this is great, and it I don't, even though I know that I know, like I know beat, like the movie beats of this, I just love it so much. And like I don't think it's, I think it's perfect. Like there's a few things in the kind of end run that I feel like they try to like not be as ambiguous with that probably like hold it back slightly for me. But yeah, I love this movie.
I think again for me, it's a noir that's all about
the relationship.
Yeah,
the relationship, but in the mystery
they work though,
and so
right?
Once like, once you know the mystery, it doesn't have any of those set pieces. You know what I mean? It is more of it's a dialogue character driven,
which like you could say the same thing about The Big Sleep, I guess.
Yeah, but that has some moments. But yeah, I guess so.
Very similar in terms. Like,
I think I like the dialogue. Like I don't know, the dialogue I like better in The Big Sleep. It just has that, you know, everything that comes out of
Bogart's
mouth is.
Yeah, like important. These are similar. I think
I like The Big Sleep better.
Yeah, I think I gave The Big Sleep also 9.5 last year. This is the thing. We've been going through these, and we've been picking
a
lot
the
of
best.
The best of the best, and a lot of movies that I really like. And I just that one, I probably like. That one's probably like really a 9.6, and this one's like a 9.3.
Yeah.
But I'm rounding up. You know, maybe that's what we'll do now. Everything will be down to the decimal, then we'll have Danny on.
Yes. Yeah.
I do that like it. It is kind of interesting how we got kind of the stairs of the rising rating where Maddie's got 7.5,
8.5,
9.5.
If I'm the only
Maddie stops it from
being a maniac. I'm going 8, baby. Like,
all right.
Let's do it. Maniac. Like, I was thinking of 7.5. Like,
I don't want to peer pressure you.
Because the thing is, when you watch two movies, I'm going to pull the curtain back a bit. Like, they're both in the same vein. I feel like I have to go over the other.
This is
like,
sometimes the problem with these series.
You're comparing it to the one you watched.
You're like, well, this one's better than this one, but you can't give them both eights. So you're like, well, I guess this one's...
But
you know.
Honestly, like it was the same way with you and the Man series, where you just go, fuck it. These are all great.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to have my whatever series that's not going to be my deal as much, or you're not going to have that, or...
Well, this may be because I had the Michael Mann where everything was at least an 8, so I wonder if we can get
that was at least a 9.
I don't know if it was a 9.
No?
No, because I don't think I gave the Keep a 9.
Which one?
The Keep.
That was an 8.
That was Shocktober.
What did we cover for we did
It
things?
Was
Collateral.
Miami Vice. Collateral, I think, was like an 8 or 8.5 for me.
Okay, everything else was.
Yeah, so I think everything
was. I
think
you were one away
8.
From a Supermaniac.
Yeah.
Aha. Uh-huh.
I think, it was the first time, though, every movie we covered was at least an 8 for me.
So,
Laura,
I don't think I did. Is a maniac.
It is a maniac.
Should we get into spoilers? Because that's pretty much why
I'm
here.
Let's jump in. So, we'll put the time at the bottom if you want to skip ahead. If you haven't seen this movie, please skip ahead.
Yeah, it's going to be a discussion.
Because to me, like, the first time I saw this, that was like, holy shit, this movie is incredible. Yeah, it came out of nowhere. I did not expect it. They never hinted at it.
It's still... comes out of nowhere. Yeah. This movie was made in 1944. It's earned. So we're going to talk about it.
So skip ahead. The time's at the bottom there. Let's talk spoilers.
Let's talk turkey.
So the detective's in the Laura's.
He's now in a
bedroom or
like a dream state.
He's in her apartment.
Yeah.
He's staring at the picture
he
on the wall.
He's lusting after this corpse, essentially, right?
Just from hearing about her and seeing the pictures of her. Mm-hmm. And
like, Lidecker is like saying, I expect you to start bringing bonbons and candy and all this kind of stuff. Of course, they'd be drugstore candy or something of the effect. It's a much better line, but it's so good.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's great. That character's such a dick. He's one of those guys of all those characters, like he's the upper class and he makes it known to everyone below him that they are below him. But yeah, so the detective, I keep on calling the detective. What is his name?
It's
McPherson.
Mark McPherson.
So McPherson is in her apartment and all of a sudden someone enters the apartment.
He's now sleeping. He's drunk half a bottle of Dimple Scotch.
Which I think that... I guess was in more or was cut out of some of the stuff originally, some of the stuff they put back in where he's a bit of an alcoholic or something.
No, that's a different movie.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
we're going to talk about that movie, but different movie.
Okay, so I'm getting my trivia mixed up. Anyways, Laura enters the apartment. She is still alive.
Oh, boy.
You find out that I guess it was another model that Vincent Price had in the apartment that was killed. Now, I don't know if I get, like, was she hiding or was she literally just away on vacation?
She was away on vacation. She went away to decide whether or not she was going to marry Shelby.
Okay.
So she goes to the country. Everyone says she's going to go to the country. They did go to the country house, but she's on a hike or something. Mm-hmm. So they don't see her.
They don't show that, do they?
No. They talk about that.
Oh, they talk about it. I was going to say, yeah, I don't remember them like going there. Yeah, because... Yeah, I was going to say it seems weird that they wouldn't have checked into that.
Yeah, they do. They say the police went there and
no one answered.
I think right when he comes in. So basically he sees her, thinks he's seeing a ghost because yeah. he's drunk and he's so and again, fucking
this it could have gone this way too, right? Like yep. this movie like, "Oh, okay, after watching like all these extractor like maybe she's a ghost trying to solve her own murder." Like, I am in this no matter what, right?
I thought it was just yeah. him because he's obsessed with her hallucinating yeah. that she's yeah. there.
It could have gone either way,
they
right?
They kind of like, fuck with you and you're playing the whole time and then
and
it's
it
like,
takes a while yeah. before they actually it's shot amazingly mm-hmm. in this thing because it's very almost ethereal mm-hmm. The sequence, the way it looks, the cinematography is yeah. gorgeous, and it really does fuck with you for a while, like yeah. what am I supposed to think, what is going on here, yeah. is she real? He doesn't believe she's real,
yeah,
he doesn't trust whatever he's seen, and then
it isn't until you start going into the plot and you know the discussion that you're like, oh no, they wouldn't yeah. be having this for the ghost, they'd be doing something, you know, stranger or something with
yeah,
the dialogue.
Yeah, like you can tell he's like, kind of interrogating. Oh, this person is in front of yeah. me. There's a different angle going on. Yeah. I got to figure out what this angle. And you can see his wheel spinning. Mm-hmm. It's another reason why I think Dana Andrews is great in this is yeah. because...
It plays out on his face.
Yeah, he plays out on his face like little small things. I think you can think he's a woodblock, but he's not a woodblock. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, and this is the sequence where they're in the two shot where he's asking her... Well, what did you decide? Are you going mm-hmm. to marry Shelby? She says, oh, I decided not to marry
yeah, her. Yeah, and he's got a, yeah. he kind of smiles a bit, doesn't
yeah,
he?
There's
yeah.
a little yeah. smile on his face, and then he goes back down. I'll see you in the morning. Don't yeah. talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. And then he leaves.
Now, the thing is, though, so he's listening to her conversation, and she phones Vincent Price, and there's no, like, surprise there. Like, it's just like, oh, yeah, I'll meet you there. Like, it's like they were in on this together. That's why I was kind of confused.
No, I think it's that she doesn't want him. She has this weird, he's the puppy dog. I got to keep the puppy dog safe yeah. sort of
Well, he's
mentality.
Doing the same thing for her, right? Like, she's a puppy dog. I keep
and
her
then, No, but it's like yeah. He knows it. Yeah. He knew that she was alive. Like, there's no like, what, you're alive. It's just like, yeah, okay, I'm back now. I'll meet you at this time or whatever. And it's just like this regular like.
Well. Yeah, and you realize later it's because he was there that night.
He knew all along.
Sleeping with that girl.
Okay, yeah, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
I mean. And he was hiding in the other room when her face got blown
and
off.
And now what about the gun? Because he does have a gun in his thing that was shot. He says he just happened to be shooting beforehand. Like,
which ends up being the truth. Is
that, so yeah, that's what you're supposed to just go with it. That
you're not supposed to when it happens. Yeah. You're supposed to still think.
It's just a weird, I guess, done. A weird coincidence. But yeah,
but it could have been he yeah. didn't clean out the gun. It yeah. could have been 3 months ago.
Yeah.
I like as a big gun enthusiast yeah. as I am. I know about my cleaning of guns.
and yeah, so from that point on, we still have half of a movie. Now to deal with, and you kind of have the unravel the mystery because you're still trying to figure out who murdered, how did this person get murdered, but then you also have of who, where is she going to end up with, who is she going to end up with, is she going to end up with Shelby? Because there's still that, like, the lusting of the detective. But
because she clearly, like, feels, like, just a physical attraction to him.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is.
Yeah, like she just came in, she just comes back, and there's a detective in her thing where he's been like, it's been
like
however,
a stranger,
couple weeks.
Really.
But for him, it's been a couple weeks. He's almost knows this woman from all the stories.
And he loves all the yeah. stories because everybody's stories are so glowing. Yeah. So even if it's just like, oh, she's the most glamorous, perfect woman in the world, molded after the gods.
Yeah.
And the other, Shelby, is just like, she's Mother Teresa, basically. Mm. That saved me, and then has a bad thing to say about it.
And then you have Waldo, who is just like pissed, jealous of the detective that, you know, he sees that she kind of maybe sees something in him.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun too. Like,
well,
like
Waldo starts breaking. Now his entrance when he sees her alive.
Yeah.
That was great, right?
Is yeah. great.
So, well, we can talk about, we're in spoilers. Yeah. You do find out Waldo is the killer. He accidentally killed the wrong person. He didn't have time to hide the gun, so he hides it in the clock. And I guess you find out that, because he keeps on mentioning when he goes to the house,
I
want to get these three items back, this vase, this clock. And the detective remembers that he has the exact same clock, and he figures out, well, that there's a hidden compartment in there, and then they find the gun in her.
And there's a great sequence where Waldo then sneaks in through the servant's entrance later. And his radio show, which he taped earlier, is being played
that is
on.
Oh, so good. He's like narrating his own movements. Yeah. That was so good.
It's incredible. And then when he does speak to her in the room.
Yeah.
It's fucking like kind of like goosebump inducing.
So I guess the original, and I think they did shoot this. There's two endings I want to talk about, but one of them is that I guess she discovers that it was him, but she actually was going to go to his apartment and just say like, just get away, flee, like before, so you don't get
caught.
That
was the Preminger original.
Yeah, and then he just snaps still, and then it kind of falls the same where he's going to go there
and
kill her, which I don't think you need that.
No, I don't think
I think it works better. I think if she's going there, telling
and the other story, one is ludicrous.
Well, the other one is just going to be the whole Waldo's whole story is kind of bullshit.
It's like a dream.
How they met and everything like that. It's kind of all they met like at a night court or something, and she lost her apartment.
Which I think is part of the original actual story. But here's the thing: like all that stuff is inferred that his stuff is his vision of her
is a bit
exaggerated.
Is exaggerated exactly, and is exaggerated in the way that he wants it exaggerated. She would never want that exactly told like that. I think the ending they got is the ending that is perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it ends up being. He comes to kill her. He sneaks in, but the detective has just left. The people guarding outside. He runs downstairs. He says, "When did Lidecker leave?" He never left.
Yeah.
And then they run right back upstairs as Lidecker is chasing with the shotgun.
The shotgun that like they found and then just still left in there.
Yeah. Well, I think
he says like because he wants to.
It's evidence.
Yeah.
He wants evidence and he wants
to touch it.
There was not thinking there's going to be two. You know, more shells put in there.
Yeah.
But I love that. That actual action sequence is incredibly well shot.
Yeah.
I kind of forgot that when I watched this. Like the way that they're shooting at him and Lidecker gets off a shot and it goes into the clock.
The clock is such a cool like.
And that basically like that is the sign of it blowing up that world of a destroying. His idea of Laura.
I do think the first time watching this, I still liked it again. I just watched last year, but like, I just remember the first time I watched all this, like I was just so blown away by like where it's going. Like she comes back and then that just totally throws everything out of whack. And you're like, okay, well, where are they going with this now? Cause the whole movie is about her murder, but she's not dead.
Whose body is this? Like,
I remember being blown away of where they go with this. It is such a fascinating journey, murder mystery, but also again, like there is a lot of interesting characters and where
I think all the characters is out, maybe out of spoilers.
Yeah. Are we done spoilers?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So back to the characters, which they're all like kind of terrible people, but they're all appealing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even like Waldo, you kind of like this fella and like that weird like
he's
witty like razor sharp wit that cuts you to your core.
Oh yeah,
and like Shelby, who is like this sociopath, but you want to hang out with this guy because like there's something fun about him.
A guy you'd want to have a drink with at a bar. Yeah,
these are the characters where like usually I don't like I need some likable characters. These are the kind of characters like I'm fine with following if they're like fun. Like they don't ever do anything that like. Obviously someone murders someone, but like they're still, I don't know. They're not like despicable characters. They all have a charm.
But
they're entertaining.
Charm to, but like, they're like, even like, some of Dane Andrews, the way he goes about his business It's pretty shady for a police officer.
He sets up everyone for like a terrible time. Like, way he does, like, that is like cruel.
And also just like how he's becoming obsessed with her and just like hanging around drinking her booze. Like, that's not good. And then you've got Shelby, who's cheating on.
Yeah,
on
the one most perfect with girls
with a couple people, right?
Yeah, it's implied that it's been a couple people
because there's the model, there's the
Judith Anderson.
Judith Anderson.
We didn't talk about the maid.
Yeah,
right?
I was just gonna say the maid
who's uncredited in this.
Yeah,
and she's uncredited. She's also in Fallen Angel, and she's great
uncredited
in that too.
In tons. I was looking at a thing, and like half her credits are uncredited. But yeah, she only has like 2-3 scenes, but they're kind of fun in this.
Yeah, I love the scare she gets at one point. It's great. The thing that we haven't mentioned is the score, which is probably the most famous score of the 1940s.
Yeah, I was reading that. And I didn't remember the score.
I was thinking the same
really?
Thing.
Like, it doesn't get stuck in your brain.
No. I'm not even clocking the score.
I can't think of it.
It's.
But I know.
It's still gets renditions done.
Oh shit.
It wasn't nominated for anything the Academy Awards, but it became a sensation. The score became bigger than the movie.
Wow.
That's crazy. Think about now there's a version of it that has lyrics about Laura.
Yeah.
Many versions of
There's
that.
A sequel called Nora?
Nora and
Dora.
Dora, Dora Explorer.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm surprised like we hadn't mentioned that before because it's one theme that kind of gets played over and over and over again.
Yeah, I remember I was reading a bunch of that and I didn't even mention it because I'm like, I can't talk about that because I don't remember it. Maybe when you play it, it'd be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, maybe you watch it again and probably like we'll get
because
your
Because almost every score from that time period would have had many different things, but they're always playing this very kind of aching, beautiful, almost saccharine.
When I have
score.
To edit this episode together, I'll find it and put it at the beginning.
Yeah, throw it in.
Normally doing off the sea. The only thing I wanted to add is, a budget $1.2 million and it made $2 million. Sorry, $1.02 million, it made $2 million, which doesn't seem like that much double its thing, but back then that was huge.
Yeah.
It wasn't like now where you have to make 2.5 because you spend, you know, more than
advertising
costs and advertising.
That would have been everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you're making, you know, double your money, if you're making $1 million off $1 million, that's pretty fucking
good.
This was a big hit.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have anything else. Do you guys have anything else to add?
Stay tuned for the next noir episodes.
Yeah.
So, this is the end of our first part of our 2022 series. Like we said, we have 3 more films to cover. Do we want to spoil what's going to be tomorrow?
Let's do the next.
So, next week, we are going to cover The Third Man from...
1949.
Carol Reeves. Have you seen The Third Man before?
Yes.
Okay, so it's a first-time watch for me, is it?
First-time watch.
Well, there you go. So, for us...
I have a giant poster of this in my dining room.
Okay. Nice.
The German poster of The Third Man.
Well, spoiler then. I'm assuming Adam likes it, but we'll find out.
I haven't seen in... I think I clocked it as 14 years.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
So... It was kind of like a first-time watch in a way.
Okay, well, yeah, we're going to be back with that, and then 2 more that we won't spoil quite yet. You can get a hold of us. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Any noir recommendations? I'm going to still try to get through. I didn't get through as many this week, but I am going to try to get through some more.
Yeah, so I'm going to put up a poll again probably in a couple days, and whatever you guys pick, I'm going to watch. I'm going to... Cool. So...
Nice.
Yeah.
Throw maybe some Nightmare Alley on there.
Ooh.
Sure. But if it doesn't go up, you can't watch it.
I don't know about that. I'm trying to get through my Blu-rays. I hit the noir bug, I think it was, 3-4 years ago? I think I talked about it on the show, and you just saw me, like, watch one of these and be blown away. I think my noir collection now is, like, in the 60s. Like, it's insane.
So that's the thing. Like, if one noir is picked over another, who cares then? Yeah. You're not going to get through 60
noirs. Well, as long as you get through something
month.
I own on Blu-ray is what I'm saying. I don't want something that's only...
So you pick the movies.
Okay.
I'll put them up.
Okay, there
we
go.
That'd be fun.
I don't care.
Yeah, exactly. You'll watch them all.
Anyways, you can get a hold of us on Facebook. We have a like page, group page. Just search Movie City Maniacs.
You can find us at moviecitymaniacs@gmail.com.
And Movie City Maniacs on Instagram and ICQ.
There you go. We'll be back.
Uh-oh.
Stay scared.
All right.